Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Inkumpi. We, as JIP, facilitated this conversation, or for us to have this conversation, just to get update, given that JIPF is the biggest fund. I don't like calling it even the fund. I'm saying it's the biggest vehicle that we can channel our savings in our economy for it to have an impactful way in the economy. So thank you so much for giving this platform in terms of you updating our listeners and the Namibian public and also the regional, because Eagle FM get to be listened by so many people. So thank you so much for giving us this platform to talk to us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Now, we will look at a different aspect, not only GIP as a fund, but we're also going to look at it within the context of GIPF being one of the key player in the economic development in terms of capital, in terms of as a custodian of the biggest saving for the Namibian people. So we will look at it in terms of its performance and also in terms of its impact and its influence in the whole economy, and also the regulatory level also.
Mm-hmm.
So we will start with our first question. We retirement saving, there is so much which is now happening as the population get to understand things, as the population also evolve and things like that. We need to a certain extent, like, explain what is the importance of this retirement savings to the development of the Namibian economy. And we have to look at it like in terms of as capital, what is the importance of retirement saving? Because I think we only look at it as retirement savings. We barely look at it that component that this retirement saving is capital. So what is the importance of this retirement saving to the development of the Namibian economy?
Oh, thank you for the question. Mm. I think I would like to start firstly on the matter of the purpose of a pension fund, and specifically GIPF, but I think all pension funds.
Yeah.
The purpose is really to save, to provide the member or the saver benefits in the future, which is basically a pension annuities to enable, it's a form of income for that member in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the main purpose and the main objective of a pension fund, including that of GIPF.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about, yes, it's capital, and what is the importance of this capital on the development of the Namibian economy? It can play a role, and it can play a significant role.
Mm-hmm.
But the main objective of this saving is to provide financial benefits to the members of the fund.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that needs to be quite appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a pension fund is either a bank nor a development fund.
Yeah.
Yes, it does invest, but it invests with a specific purpose.
Mm.
And that purpose is really that let's grow this fund through, yes, savings, but also through proper investments that are made that are earning a return and growing the fund so that it's able to provide financial benefits to members.
Yeah.
So the idea is really to at least keep up with inflation because we know if we just keep the money not investing it, it's not earning a return ideally that is above inflation, then the real value of that money and the benefit that members will be able to get in 10, 20 years time will not be the same and will not be adequate to meet their livelihoods needs. So that's the main objective. Now, yes, during the process of making investment, a pension saving or a pension fund can have a positive impact on the development of an economy. So the money could be used to build infrastructure, to build companies, and so on. And through that, it's actually building the economy. But that is also why the fund in the all pension funds, they do not only invest specifically in Namibia, but they diversify, where you find many a times 55% of the investment is outside Namibia and only 45% is local, specifically due to regulations.
Yeah, maybe just to emphasize there that the main aim is to save for these particular individuals so that when they retire, they have they have something to fall back on, they have some money or they have some, or their finance, they are going to keep up. Even if they retire, they still have able to live that life that they are living. Mm-hmm. Maybe just to explain that, that the concept now involve investing that money somewhere. Correct. Because I think that they think that is maybe a narrative to say, where is our money? We gave you our money. Maybe that understanding or that concept need to be understood that this money is grown through investment. It need to be invested.
Yeah. No, that is correct. Mm. Yeah, this money is invested mm-hmm. in various financial assets, mm-hmm. Whether it's in shares mm-hmm. that are listed on stock exchanges, mm-hmm. both locally here on the Namibian Stock Exchange, in the region, for example, in South Africa on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, mm-hmm. and other stock exchanges in the world. Mm-hmm. So, and that the other part of the same money is also invested in real assets. Mm-hmm. This is what is referred to here as alternative or unlisted investments,
okay.
locally, mm-hmm. but also in the region and globally. Mm-hmm. There is also some unlisted investments made. Mm-hmm. Others are invested in fixed income instruments, mm. such as government bonds issued by the government of the Republic of Namibia, for example, mm. but also by other sovereigns. Okay. So that's just to mention a number of instruments in which this money is invested.
Mm-hmm.
But due care is always taken to ensure that the money is invested in safe investments
mm-hmm.
That will grow, that will earn a return, and that helped the fund to grow.
To grow, okay. Now, maybe just now to move to our second question. You also highlighted there that the money or this retirement saving get to be distributed in different geographical region where it will derive value or it will get more returns. Now, as a fund, and we know you have been in a financial sector for a while, our regulations say that, or we have a regulation that state that that we call domestic asset requirement to say that how much of the fund, how much of retirement, how much of medical aid, how much of insurance and reinsurance must be kept or invested in Namibia. So, what are your view in that ratio, that percentage that require asset that are generated, or the fund that are generated, especially for retirement? What are your view in that level, the 45% of the domestic asset requirement?
Yeah, firstly, yes, the savings are part of the national savings mm-hmm. of the country, even mm-hmm. the pension fund savings.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, yes, it makes perfect sense mm-hmm. for some of this capital to be deployed here in the local economy to help build the local economy.
Mm-hmm.
So, from that perspective, yes, I'm aligned mm-hmm. to the idea of having a regulation
mm-hmm.
which will require a certain percentage of savings, mm-hmm. specifically in this case pension savings,
mm-hmm.
to be invested locally.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the debate will be
mm-hmm.
the 45%, mm-hmm. is it too high or is it too low?
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose a lot of investment experts, economists will have different opinion.
Yeah.
I think given our context and our setup, it's an appropriate level.
Mm-hmm.
Just about or just below half mm-hmm. of any pension fund investment to be mm-hmm. invested locally.
Yeah.
And I do think that there is so far mm-hmm. adequate instruments into which this amount can be invested.
Okay.
But then still allowing the possibility and opportunity for just more than half to be invested elsewhere. For diversification, you need that for risk diversification, but also to earn better return elsewhere.
Mm.
I'm not necessarily saying returns on investment in Namibia is always inferior, not at all.
Yeah.
Some of the investment have been doing very well and earning better return, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So my view, yes, I'm happy with that balance.
Mm. Okay, but just to extend it a bit, you also mentioned the Namibian Stock Exchange. Now, looking at, I think we, in terms of those that are domestic listed, not dual listed, I think they are below 10 or still around 6 or 7 there. Now, looking at what the availability of domestic listed companies and the availability of different assets in different sectors, like if you look at the banks are dominating the most listed companies like in Namibia, and you have only now when we introduce MTC, you are now having a bit of diversification in terms of the listed company. So what are your view also in that in terms of, because a bigger portion of the fund is on the listed space, but in the Namibian case, we have few companies that are listed. And so maybe in the future, in terms of, as you keep mentioning, diversification, because you also need to diversify in terms of sectoral diversification, mm-hmm. in case in the banking sector something happened, at least you are well exposed in different sectors.
Yeah.
Maybe what are your views? What do we have to do as a country to encourage more listing or to encourage more company to go public in terms of availing different sectors or different assets that the fund can invest in? Maybe what can the country do? Because it's a costly measure to go public. And I think for many Namibian grown companies, it might be a very expensive process to get listed. So what are your views on that in getting more companies to get listed?
Yeah, firstly, maybe I can start by saying pension funds. Mm. The pension funds money is managed by asset and investment managers, mm-hmm. who are given mandate. And these are the fund managers who make decision to invest in instruments, yeah. including those that are on the stock exchange,
yeah.
whether only local or dual listed.
Yes.
Now, and I would like to believe they would consider to invest in a share if it offers value. In other words, it's a safe investment and it will yield good return in the medium to long term.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one. So by that, I'm trying to say if there are local listings,
mm-hmm.
I am sure in asset managers will consider them as part of potential investment instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question on the limitation of few local listings, maybe that is something that can be discussed, especially with a stock exchange.
Yeah.
What can be done? Mm. You alluded to challenges that especially maybe small Namibian companies will encounter in trying to list on the stock exchange.
Yeah.
You need to meet certain requirements to be able to list. As you mentioned, there could be cost implications, but there could also be other reasons possibly. Family-owned businesses, the owners do not want to lose control, and therefore they will not go list on the stock exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we need to find ways where we can get more local listings on the stock exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could have a second and even a third board where the requirements are probably lowered and companies can graduate until they get to the first board.
Yeah.
So those are some of the possibilities that could be invested. But definitely, yes, listing is one way to raise capital for a company. It may be very difficult for a greenfield, a completely new company that is starting, because obviously investors want to have a little bit more understanding what's the track record and so on.
Yeah.
But it remains an option.
Mm.
So if you are asking me what is my view, yes, definitely I would like to see more listings.
Mm-hmm.
It create investment opportunities for asset owners and fund managers, but I think it also create an opportunity for those in business or requiring capital to have an alternative option of raising capital other than simply commercial debt.
Yeah, given the country has a huge funding gap, but our stock exchange is still quite shallow, or the listing are just not so a lot. Yeah, maybe just now also moving now to the unlisted space there. Now, the Namibian economy is mostly dominated by the unlisted space, or what you call alternative or unlisted companies. And with this structure in place and the few listed companies, so what is GIPF's strategy in ensuring that the unlisted space is now adequately capitalized from the domestic retirement savings? As we say that, yes, the main aim is to grow that money for the people that are retiring, but at the same time, it could be a vehicle, it could be the capital that can be also utilized, especially in companies that are offering good returns. And given now our structure for our economy, which is so unlisted, may end what is in place already and the funding gap that exists for SME and also for bigger project, even project preparation funded that are still not grown to the risk project. So what does GIPF has in place in terms of when they talk to the asset managers or whoever is responsible for investing, what is at the table in ensuring that capital also get it to such to the unlisted space, especially the domestic front?
Yeah, firstly, the Namibian financial environment does allow funds to be channeled in the unlisted or through to into the unlisted investment space.
Okay.
It is regulated. You are aware that institutional investors, especially pension funds, they are expected to invest at least up to 3.5% of their total assets in this unlisted investment or unlisted assets. And therefore, that has created a, an opportunity for those seeking capital to raise money through unlisted asset managers that have been, that has received allocations from pension funds. And GIPF has played quite a big role in that.
Okay.
So the fund has got a portfolio of unlisted asset and fund managers that has been allocated mandate, mandates in specific industry or economic sectors, be it agriculture, be it infrastructure, property development, private equity, and these have made significant investments in the local economy. So there is a number of enterprises, infrastructure, commercial properties that have benefited. So on your question on what is GIPF doing, GIPF is already invested in there, and we will continue investing in the unlisted assets in Namibia.
Yeah, maybe just a follow-up question there. I think there were some sort of asset some asset managers, because every time you look at the NAMFISA quarterly report, you always have capital in the unlisted space that are not finding projects to invest in. There's always around around 5 billion always lying around, not finding a project. Maybe what are your views in there? Because we know that there is most of Namibian projects are greenfield. They are not de-risked to a certain extent to allow or for the conservative part of capital to come. Maybe what are your thoughts in that to unlock capital to go to the unlisted space? What need to be done when we are facing every quarter capital not being utilized or being channeled? And what can be done perhaps at the country level to unlock such capital to go to projects that need to be funded, especially in terms of de-risking?
Yeah. Well, firstly, I must maybe just state that the what is classified as unlisted assets does not exclude startups if they are well prepared and the risks are identified, mitigated, and they still unlisted investments made into such startups and greenfield projects in Namibia. But yes, you are right that it's more difficult to attract capital to a greenfield or a startup project, obviously, because there's so much uncertainty. Now, what needs to happen is, yes, how do one de-risk a project? I heard you mentioning about project preparation funding, which is, that can help if there is a project preparation funding available. With my previous employer, DBN, there is a small project preparation fund that DBN had used to help finance the preparation of projects to bring them to a bankable stage. And yes, that is one intervention. I would not think that will necessarily be the turf of a pension fund. As I said, these are people's money that they've saved it. It's not a development fund. So this money, they it's really seeking investable projects in which they can
that are ready.
That are ready, make investment, that are safe, grow them, and make provision for the members' benefits in the future. But those interventions that you were mentioning to help prepare project will obviously unlock opportunities in the country.
Yes, Yeah, and thank you for that elaboration also. Now, given that, okay, we have our regulations, especially for the unlisted and alternative space, and they have identified what can be categorized as alternative and in the, and so the unlisted, the type of asset class that fall in the, in those categories. Now, given the new emerging sectors that are offering investment opportunities, such as now the green hydrogen, fertilizer production, oil production, refining, the water infrastructure, especially the desalination now, mm-hmm. given now those new emerging sectors, mm-hmm. is the fund reviewing its alternative market investing strategy in line with this development? Or are we just going to stick to the old classification of the unlisted, I mean, and the alternative sectors?
Well, any investor has to move with the times. Mm. You need to seek out new opportunities, mm-hmm. and GRPF will continue doing that as well. It is doing the same, and it will continue doing that. Mm. Now, you mentioned about new sectors. Yes, they are in early stages. Mm. You ask, is the fund observing and seeing if there are opportunities developing? The answer is a definite yes. Mm-hmm. As I've explained a little bit earlier, the fund usually invests by allocating mandate.
Yeah.
If it decides, for example, there's opportunities in the oil and gas, green hydrogen, and the fund could then say, okay, we are allocating a specific amount. Mm-hmm. We will then invite potential asset and fund managers with expertise to be able to receive this mandate from the fund, identify the right opportunities in this industry, invest, grow, and through that obviously have an impact in the economy, but at the same time also earn return for the fund. So that is what will happen. So the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. We will continue observing the developments in these new sectors.
Yeah.
It's very important that we understand the risks and we understand in which form and how we are going to participate if we so decide.
Yeah. And the main reason, maybe just to add, the main reason we are asking this question is that looking at the Namibian context at the national level and also Africa, mostly at the regional level, it's always us looking for capital from somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's always us going into different continents to beg people to invest. So, and there are these also people that are people like me, I would say that, okay, cool. We keep asking for other people to risk their capital. I think we also need to move at a certain stage where we also need to start being comfortable to a certain extent to take a risk in terms of our developmental agendas. Mm-hmm. Because now the investment that are coming from somewhere, they're also coming with conditions and they take a bit of liberty and the sovereignty from a piece of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe we also need to start now engaging the likes of GIPF in terms of new mandates and also the likes of DBN. So that is just where we are coming with this question. But as you say, gradually, but we are also starting just to raise this type of question to see what is happening.
Yes. Mm. Well, I have spent quite a long time in the whether banking and investment sector. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it is I believe that money will always move where there is opportunities, where the investment is safe, and where there is good return, especially when you have the free flow of capital. And I do think we do have it, even in our region, especially in the CMA region. And I also then would like to add that investment is not so much just about the money, the capital itself. It's a little bit more than that as well. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's really more also about skills. Yes, it's resources, opportunities, but also knowledge, expertise, and so on.
Okay.
So I think when you're talking about locals, for example, or we Namibians calling for foreign direct investment, it's not only the capital. Mm-hmm. You're actually then saying, look, we have certain opportunities, maybe resources, but this requires also knowledge and expertise to exploit them to a valuable product or service. Mm-hmm. Money is just one of those ingredients, but there's much more than that. Mm-hmm. So when you are marketing and calling for investment, it's not only the capital. So for me, I do believe that whenever there is an investment opportunities with potential to earn good return, capital will always flow to that investment from the region, from both the region, but internationally as well.
Yeah, and just before we deviated there, opportunities are coming, opportunities are emerging. We are learning how to manage those risk and make this project bankable to allow capital to come. But now the limit is in terms of the regulations, especially because all these projects are now green or unlisted or alternative. Mm-hmm. But that is where the limit it is, as we said earlier, that only 3.5% exposure is given to you. Yeah. Now, as this opportunity keep now emerging, mm-hmm. and there is this regulatory ceiling that is put on it,
yeah.
how are we going to handle this? Are we moving with time? Are we talking to the regulators? Because we need also to unlock now to allow the capital to flow freely, as you said, to those sectors.
Yeah.
What can we do and what advice maybe to the regulator or yeah. just to tell at the national level?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I hear you more or less, or I understand you more or less saying, look, okay, the regulators have allowed up to 3.5% for pension funds.
Mm.
Should that maybe be increased to 10% to 15%? I'm hearing you saying, should maybe institutions like the pension funds approach the regulators to increase that?
Just looking at what is coming now, yes. and it's not even far anymore in terms of those sectors.
Yes, but I think it's very important to attract the right capital.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't finance each and every project with any type of capital.
Mm.
So there is debt capital, for example.
Mm.
Yes, there is development finance capital. There's venture capital.
Mm-hmm.
There's private equity.
Yes.
And all this type of capital is able to accept a certain level of risk.
Of risk, yes.
So it will not be appropriate, for example, to say, well, you have research and development, and you would like a pension fund, which is basically managing other people's money, which are the members, which are planning and are hoping to live on this money in during their times of needs.
Mm.
You can't use that to finance research and development or exploration.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, you then need to write to seek the right capital,
maybe
really capital that is able to handle that type of risk, and that will be private capital from venture capitalists who are saying, yes, I am able to take this risk. If I lose, there's a high probability I lose it, but they also, if the returns come, they are usually extremely high as well. So as you are talking about all these industries that are coming up, and my response is yes, but they need to find the right capital, source of capital.
Yeah.
They cannot, for example, all look at the pension fund industry.
Mm.
Pension fund money is not always earmarked for those type of investments.
Yeah. Then, you know, it always is the horizon that matters, like the conservativeness of the money and the patience of it. That is always, for some of us that are still coming in the industry, we're always going to use that as our basis for asking questions like that, to say, yeah, the saving are more patient. I mean, the retirement are more patient a bit compared to other type of capital. That could be the reason why we say, okay, maybe we should look at it, because they've even have a long term, they have a longer horizon and they are more patient. And at the developmental level, I will love that type of capital, which is not going to be over my neck to say pay. So that is just maybe our reasoning for always coming to knock on your door to say, you are more patient, how about, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think one need to be very clear when you say patient, meaning that, well, you have a long-term view, or you have your need for that capital can be very long-term, because you may have people who are only going to retire in 30, 20, and so on.
Mm.
Time, that's one part. That's basically the duration that you have to deploy the capital.
Yeah,
that's one part. So patience in terms of time frame.
Yeah,
but then there's also the risk part. So this is money that you cannot take any type of risk with. So when you say patient, it's just very important to understand that we do not confuse the duration, the luxury of time we have, with the risk.
It does not minimize the risk.
Not at all. It's not the same thing.
Mm.
So, yes, the duration is there. Mm. And you could say, well, a pension fund could invest in a 10-year bond and wait to maturity because we have that. That's one thing. Mm. But you cannot also equally say, look, you can also just finance research and development because that's highly risky.
Yeah.
So it's again, I'm coming back to the point. Mm. Yes, for development, for growing the economy, you need development capital. I don't think you could say, look, I'm going to tap solely on the pension fund industry for that. You need to have to source the right capital for each type of investment.
Okay. Now, let us get personal, and personal I mean to your operation JIPF. Now, looking at JIPF performance for the last financial year, the gap between contribution and payout still exists, and it's still a risk, if we can put it in such. And as somebody who's also about to reach her retirement, yeah, maybe 20 years to go, I'm worried, how is the fund going to manage the gap? Because contribution, then payout, and also the population structure is changing a bit. People are living longer and some are retiring. You have that now combination within the population dynamics of the country. Then you have this gap that exists in terms of contribution. So how, what is the strategy in place? What is there which is tangible, which are so comfortable to say, no, we are minimizing this and our retirees or those that are going to retire, they should not worry.
Well, firstly, maybe just clarity on that. On the what we're referring to is that gap. That's really just a mathematical calculation of the difference between the pension contributions that the fund is receiving from the employer and the employees who are members in comparison to the benefits that is being paid to members who are in retirement. And the gap then comes about if what is being paid out to member is to members that are in retirement is more than what is being collected.
Yeah.
That is usually the norm for maturing pension funds, as you have more and more of your members that are going into retirement, and maybe lesser, and your new members are not growing at the same pace.
Yeah.
That is usually the norm, but firstly, at the moment, how is that gap financed or covered or funded, if I can put it that way? It is basically covered by the investment returns that the fund is making on the current portfolio of investment. And it's more than adequately being covered. So meaning that there's still a surplus that can actually be plowed back to help grow the asset. That is one. Now, on the other concern, that you, or the other question you have, that look, as a young member of the fund, should I be worried that maybe by the time I'm going into retirement, given this gap, there is nothing that the fund has to cater for my benefit? That is unlikely to happen. Firstly, obviously, the only thing that can happen is the fund can wind down, but it should always have resources to pay the members until the last member is out of the fund.
Yeah.
So it's not a major concern that we have.
Okay.
But for the continuity and sustainability, the key focus is that we must make sound investments to that will continue earning a good return to cover the funding gap for as long as the pension fund is continuing attracting new members, and then it, which meaning it will still remain in existence.
Yeah.
So if new membership stops joining, yes, then you mean then it means that you're going to get this fund almost winding down. But up to the last member, they will all they will always be then resources to cater for the benefit of that member.
Yeah.
And that is why we have this continuous actuarial valuation of fund to determine the present value of the liabilities. How does that compare to the assets that the fund has?
Yeah.
And for as long as that is above 100, meaning that the assets are more than the liabilities, then that gives assurance that each and every member is catered for in terms of benefits going forward.
Yeah. Now, you said new members, and that now bring me to these, to everyone, almost all the analysts and political analysts. everyone look at is looking at the government portfolio of employees. They are just calling it the wage bill. Mm-hmm. Everyone look at the wage bill. But when you say now, as long as we have new members that are coming in, mm-hmm. now there is a call that we need to reduce public employment. Mm-hmm. Government need to stop employing new people. Government need to cut down to reduce the wage bill. Mm-hmm. Now, with such wide calls coming from different arenas of the economy, mm-hmm. And you say the fund need to be sustained. Mm-hmm. As more people retire, you also need new people coming in. Mm-hmm. How will now this affect the funding of the fund? And with the political election is coming, new political ideas and ideology are so going in place in terms of sustaining the wage bill or sustaining the current employment of more than almost around 200,000. Mm-hmm. If now, in case such type of measures go in place, we stop employing or employ at the same rate in government, how will that affect the fund, the funding of GIPF?
Okay, well, I was alluding to this earlier on, mm-hmm. Where I'm saying, look, the fund will just scale down in size mm-hmm. if the number of or if the growth rate of new members mm-hmm. is slowing down, mm-hmm. the fund will just start to scale down in size. Mm-hmm. But if it's managed robustly, mm-hmm. it will still remain fully funded. Mm-hmm. So currently, the fund has got assets of about GIPF now, mm-hmm. 165 billion. Mm-hmm. The liabilities, which means the present value of future annuities
yeah. mm-hmm.
that need to be paid, mm-hmm. is a little bit much lesser than that.
Okay.
So that's when we talk about the fund being fully funded, being in a healthy position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have lesser members joining mm-hmm. over an extended period of time,
mm-hmm.
for example, due to a strategy mm-hmm. that the main participating employers are scaling down
mm-hmm.
on the level of employment,
mm-hmm.
you will only observe that with time,
mm-hmm.
the total assets mm-hmm. may also be decreasing,
mm-hmm.
maybe from 165 billion,
mm-hmm.
maybe to 110 billion.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are managing the fund and your liability, well, it will also mean the liabilities will also be coming down.
Okay.
So you can end up with a fund that has got assets of 110 billion
mm-hmm.
and liabilities of 100 million. That mm-hmm. is the key ratio.
Okay.
So for as long as that ratio is in that at that level,
mm-hmm.
assets always being more than the liabilities,
mm-hmm.
then the fund is in a good position.
Okay.
Irrespective of whether it has got fewer members
mm-hmm.
Than before mm-hmm. because of a scaling down mm-hmm. strategy of participating in
employers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Then also another component to that is that there are also voices now in terms of the preservation. There are so now voices in terms of preservation and also the importance of retirement saving, meaning me tapping on my retirement while I haven't reached my age. And also the new law which we are waiting to implement or to change perhaps. Now, given that regulatory uncertainty in how much it should be preserved, should we remain at 75 or should we not? How are we handling that regulatory uncertainty? And regardless of the direction after it is being implemented or agreed on, what is in place so far? How is GIPF preparing for any level of preservation that is going to come? How is GIPF preparing for that? And perhaps how significant it is if we reduce that preserving ratio, how significant it is and how will it impact? Because, maybe I don't want to make it a mouthful. Maybe let me end there for now. Yeah.
Well, it's a good question. Obviously, it's going to be a change in regulation
mm-hmm.
that is going to impact all pension funds.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I like always to make it very clear that this change in regulation is not initiated by GIPF.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something driven by GIPF.
Mm-hmm.
GIPF is just one of those pension funds that will have to observe
mm-hmm.
and comply with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all the pension funds are observing it and preparing themselves administratively to be able to implement an idea
mm-hmm.
when it becomes implementable or when it's implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does it mean, its impact on a pension fund?
Mm-hmm.
Really, when a member, for example, decide to withdraw their, we can call it accumulated contribution in a pension fund, either on retirement or just before retirement, the impact of that action really on a pension fund is simply that, yes, it slightly reduces the assets of the pension fund because somebody has taken out his portion.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it should also reduce the future liability of that pension fund because the pension fund has no longer any obligation to cater for the benefits of that with that member that is withdrawn in future. So it shouldn't adversely impact the pension fund. It is more, yes, assets reduces, but liability also reduces. It's just relative. I think really the issue here is more about the implications on members. What do you do with your withdrawal? Would you really then make use of it in such a manner that it will still continue creating value for you, especially when you are in retirement and you need that most? That's really, I think, the main concern. That, yes, maybe some will withdraw their pension, whether full or whether a high proportion, depending on what the regulation allows, and then misuse or squander the money, and then you have nothing in retirement age. So I do think there is much a bigger risk on the members who are withdrawing their pension more than on the pension fund.
Yeah, but maybe internally or within the pension fund environment, is there perhaps a conducive ratio, a better number to say preserve to this extent?
Well, if you ask me, I would say, look, if you can preserve 100% of your pension savings until the time that you retire. So at the moment, on either resignation or even retirement, you can withdraw up to one third of your savings. That the debate is now, should that be, and that is now, should that be lowered to 25% as is being proposed? And the debate is not now, why lower it? You allow me to take as much as I want. I think that's the debate specifically on that clause. And I'm just saying, really, it depends. If you ask me, I'll say if it's better to really for a member, a working person, who is saving for retirement through a pension fund, to do their utmost best to preserve their savings and not take it before retirement and you use it maybe inappropriately and have nothing later. So if you are asking me now, is 25% the best or should it be 33%, the one third? Personally, the more you can preserve or keep in the pension fund, the better for the member in retirement.
Now, one of moving away now to something else and to one of our last question, I think, is the ESG, the environmental, the social, and the governance component. As we keep talking about sustainability and sustainability, we also need to walk the talk. The implementation is quite key, especially in a smaller economy, which is losing so much in many aspects. Now, GIPF is the custodian of the biggest saving, retirement saving. And in our view, we can say it is a better chance of making industries or asset manager comply because I give you my capital, invest it in line with this. How is the implementation and the alignment of the fund investment to the ESG? If you can just perhaps update us on the fund activities and strategies on ESG protocol compliances, both on the environment, the social, and the governance.
I really like to simplify this issue. It's something that I have been involved with for quite some time, even in my previous role in the development finance space. What it is really is simply the world recognizing that we have this one Earth or this one planet Earth, and the activities of humans over the years has resulted in environmental degradation that has now come back to bite us. The increase in climate temperatures or in temperatures because of the CO2 that we have been emitting into the into the atmosphere for generations.
Mm-hmm.
Other waste that we are releasing in the environment and in our oceans, they are now coming back to haunt us, and we need to now change our behavior and conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, I think that's expected from individual natural person, but then also corporates,
mm-hmm.
Which are having these significant economic activities that mm-hmm. have got an impact on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And ESG simply saying that a good citizen, corporate mm-hmm. citizen, mm-hmm. world citizen,
mm-hmm.
should really conduct themselves in mm-hmm. such a manner that they are safeguarding the environment,
mm-hmm.
hence the E,
mm-hmm.
and that they are also, their activities have got positive impact on community, society, hence the
mm-hmm.
S,
mm-hmm.
and that their decisions around the conduct of their business
mm-hmm.
follows good practice, hence the good governance, and hence the G. So that is really what it is,
mm-hmm.
that we should conduct our business activities in a manner that is preserving, protecting the environment,
mm-hmm.
that has got positive impact ideally on the societies,
mm-hmm.
and that we make our decisions should be, the decision-making process should be above board,
mm-hmm.
following good ethics and so on, hence good governance.
Mm-hmm.
That is what ESG is.
Mm-hmm.
And institutions have then that as a policy,
mm-hmm.
Have an ESG policy. Some mm-hmm. will sign up to ESG protocols, like GIPF has signed up to the United Nations protocol on ESG,
mm-hmm.
and it's simply a commitment to say whatever we do, we want to make sure that we are protecting the environment, we are having a positive societal impact, and mm-hmm. that we follow good corporate governance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a fund that is providing money to asset managers
mm-hmm.
that are on the ground, that are making the actual investment,
mm-hmm.
we are saying we also want to make sure that our fund managers
mm-hmm.
have got good ESG policies and practices in
mm-hmm.
place
mm-hmm.
so that their conduct and way of doing business is mm-hmm. aligned mm-hmm. to our philosophy and when it comes to ESG.
Mm-hmm.
So we fully subscribe to that. I
mm-hmm.
think about four weeks ago we had this Responsible Investments Symposium,
mm-hmm.
where we shared ideas, discussed on best strategy, best practice out there,
mm-hmm.
and also just make sure that the fund
mm-hmm.
and the asset managers that are managing the fund's money
mm-hmm.
are aligned.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fund managers then, when mm-hmm. they do the actual investment, because
mm-hmm.
those are the entities that do the actual investments,
mm-hmm.
on the ground as they assess projects,
mm-hmm.
then they make sure that if I'm investing in this particular agricultural project,
mm-hmm.
What is its impact on the environment?
Okay.
How do the society or the community in which it is
mm-hmm.
operating? And are the decisions made following good corporate governance?
Mm-hmm.
And then they expect that from the project implementer to
mm-hmm.
give assurance that yes,
mm-hmm.
we're doing the right thing when it comes to ESG.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fund manager will make a decision that at least because you are compliant,
mm.
we can then at least invest. And they can report back also to the fund owner, which is the pension fund,
mm.
to say, your money that you have given us, GIPF, under your mandate, we only invest it in projects that are complying with good ESG practices.
Mm-hmm.
That is really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the objective is just let's change
mm.
our world.
Mm.
Let's change our environment for the better.
Tati Ngubi? Thank you so much for answering our questions.
You're most welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right.